Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program Jason Lipke, who is Vice President of Corporate Sales Services at C.H. Robinson. And today we're going to talk about On Your Radar, important logistics trends and outlook for 2016. Now, you know, it's December now. The new year is just around the corner. You know, a lot of companies are probably already wrapped up with their strategy for the coming year, but you know, as we all know in the supply chain logistics industry, it's critically important to keep a pulse on what's happening across so many different fronts. And obviously, we're not going to be able to talk about all the different trends that are happening in the industry today, but certainly we'll touch upon a few ones like the economy and what's happening in the transportation market, for example, and what impact that might have, or things to be thinking about as we enter a new year here. And it's great to have Jason on the program to kind of share his perspective on what he's seeing in his role there at C.H. Robinson, as well as what he's seeing and hearing, you know, from the companies that he's working with. I just want to remind those of you that are joining us today that part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you do have a question for Jason as we're having our conversation here, you can do so via the submit a question button or via the chat feature. And certainly if we've got time and it's a good and appropriate question, I'll try to weave it into the conversation. So with that, Jason, welcome to the program.
Adrian, thanks much. Looking forward to it.
So, Jason, every time we have a new guest on the program, I always like to ask, you know, how they even got into the supply chain logistics industry. So why don't we start there really briefly before we dive into the episode topic. And you know, tell us a little bit about your career path, how and why you got involved in supply chain logistics, and what your current role and responsibilities are there at C.H. Robinson.
Yeah, like many people, I'm sure, coming right out of school, my plan was not overly well planned, but I did start out opening the Mall of America in Minnesota. And one of the things that I found out in opening the mall was we started running lots of ads for products that we didn't have. And so customers would come in and we didn't have products to provide them. And so we had to find substitutes. And I quickly realized how important supply chain was. And so when Robinson, when the opportunity came to start with Robinson 22 years ago, I took it, and I've been excited ever since. Really, I started like many people in transportation and operations, understanding how things work, what terminology and verbiage there is, and applied that through account management to a spot today where I lead sales teams that pursue some of our largest complex clients, as well as teams that support our industries and our network globally. As well as starting to set vertical strategies that hopefully add value back to clients so that they can understand what best practices they can learn from each other while still competing in a fair environment.
Yeah, that's great. It's always good to you know, have that real world experience in terms of seeing how, you know, supply chain logistics can impact the operation. So there, that early experience there at the mall, you know, certainly triggered that curiosity and understanding of the important role that supply chain logistics plays in our everyday world. So that's a great beginning there. So let's get into the topic now and start with a basic yet, you know, important topic that companies always have to consider when they're putting their strategy together, right, for the coming year. And that is, you know, the outlook for economic growth. And certainly there's you know, you pick up the paper every day, and depending on which economist is talking or which economic indicator you're looking at, it you sort of get kind of mixed signals here and there. But you know, based on your perspective and what you're hearing from customers, I mean, do you think the economy is poised for growth in 2016? And you know, will certain countries or regions, you know, do better than others?
Well, I certainly thought your first question was a lot easier than the second one. I'm not an economist, and I won't pretend to be one on this episode. But I will say that if you believe the things you read, the economy is growing roughly GDP around 2.2% today. And if you overall you think, well, that's good, it's growing. If you compare that to the 70s and 80s, where GDP was growing around 4%, that's a little bit slower. And potentially underperforming than what it has in years past. So kind of estimating growth into 16, many people believe that it will be much like it is in 15, maybe some slightly better growth than what it has been this year. But there's a lot of things that impact that. And I think at the end of the day, If you take a look at when we ended the recession back in June of 2009, typically you see growth for about 5 years before you see a pullback. And in today's world, we're not but right about the 7th year of growth. And I think that has to have people a little bit cautious in terms of what 2016 might mean. Overall, there's some positive things out there. Interest rates are still low. People are still spending. So that part is good. But the downside of that is industrial production has dipped way down from 4% to 1%. And that has, you know, that's about a 12% impact on our GDP. So when you think about some of those things, there's some optimism, but there's also caution out there. You ask a little bit about industries that have been impacted. Clearly, over the last several years, with interest rates being low, big ticket items like automotive, people are buying cars and big ticket items because they can, and they can take a loan and use that money to their advantage. On the other hand, you take a look at some industries like oil and gas, and it's been really negatively impacted. And we're looking for ways to help those companies get through not just this year, but in the 16, so that they can have a positive outlook coming into 17. So overall, yes, I think there's going to be some growth. I would not tell anybody to take that to the bank, but there's signs that suggest slow growth. And for the most part, when you think about areas or regions that might be impacted a little bit differently than what they have historically, a lot of people are starting to look at nearshoring. And so when you think about kind of regions that might be impacted, Mexico is definitely an area where people are starting to look at. And a lot of that is just because labor rates have been rising and quality and service disruptions impact supply chains. And there's just some comfort in that strategy of having some product closer to end customers so that you don't have any of the disruptions that can really have a negative impact on your business. So, you know, my advice to people is have a plan, be prepared for a drastic upswing or downswing. But if you believe everything as it is today, slow, steady growth, maybe a little bit less than what we all would want, is probably what to expect in 16.
Yeah, that's a great way to, you know, to summarize it. I mean, I think, you know, cautiously optimistic is the way I hear it. You know, the term I hear, I continue to hear a lot from shippers. And you're right, you know, it really depends by industry, you know, what's happening out there. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that things were booming in the oil and gas industry, as you mentioned. And, you know, it didn't take long for, you know, for the pendulum to swing in the other direction. You know, so in kind of this economic environment, right, or this kind of outlook in terms of slow but steady, you know, growth, I mean, do you see, you know, cost management becoming more important in 2016 than in the past? And if so, I mean, what steps are do you see companies planning to take?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, even when the economy is growing, I think cost management is always part of the discussion. But it is more now, even, you know, with the slow growth in the economy. I think people are looking, public companies have the responsibility to grow shareholder value, which means you're still trying to grow your company, but if the growth is going to be slow, you're going to have to take it ways to reduce costs. I think the interesting thing is that many companies approach an economy like this and they look for opportunistic savings versus consistent, sustained savings. And when you think about what leading companies do, it's more around sustained savings. And so there's a number of areas where people can impact it. You can't just cut and cut and cut. You have to find ways to grow. So you do have to have a balance there. But at the end of the day, leading companies are looking for sustained savings. And some of the ways you can do that are around having consistent procurement cycles. And we can talk about that a little bit more in detail if people have questions about what that means. But it's having regular routines, making it kind of a constraint-based bid, not just, hey, what are the lowest rates out there that I can get? That's clearly important. When you take a look at benchmarking, where do you sit in the marketplace? And one of the things that we've found with a lot of clients today is that while they want the quantitative piece of it, they want the math savings, they also look for process improvement. So really leading companies are looking for that qualitative piece. We've deployed a process where we're actually putting supply chain engineers on site with clients to talk about their business and help them bridge gaps between sales, customer service, and supply chain, to really understand where those sustained savings opportunities are. And that seems to be a pretty big hit in the market as well. And last, I would just say that, you know, companies are looking for supplier reductions. They don't have the resources to do whatever they want to in an economy where it's slow growth. And because of that, they're looking for those suppliers to do more. So a lot of people are looking at collaborative supplier relationships, driving efficiencies to enable them to take the dollars they do have and invest it in their core business. So I guess my advice to people that are listening to this would just be, find out who your key suppliers are, partner with them truly, and spend time looking at both cost and growth opportunities for your organization.
That's a great point. I mean, I'm, you know, this past year, what I've been telling companies is, you know, regardless of what the economic situation is, you know, the reality is, and what I hear the pain point is from a lot of companies is that, you know, they're having difficulty keeping up with the rapid pace of change, right? And, you know, whether it's upswings or downswings or just, you know, keeping up with the competitive environment out there. And, you know, I go back to, you know, things that we've been talking about really for decades as kind of the things that companies ought to really start walking the talk around today. And that is, number one, breaking down functional silos internally, right? So the silos between logistics and manufacturing and procurement and quality, so on and so forth, right? That kind of create these inefficiencies. And walking the talk on collaboration, right? Collaboration with your suppliers, collaboration with your customers, collaborations with your 3PL partners. And those are really going to be the ways that you're going to drive, as you mentioned, kind of sustainable savings. I think a lot of companies, it always kind of pains me when I see it in the paper. You know, they keep repeating the same mistakes when they're trying to reduce costs. And that is, you know, they just slash the labor force, right? And, you know, that gets you those short-term cost savings, right? But we all know, particularly in supply chain logistics with, you know, the challenges that people have in finding talent, that, you know, that and from a long-term perspective, that's kind of a negative strategy to take. So kind of when you know, there's kind of the pressure perhaps or the spotlight or the inclination perhaps to, you know, put in place things from a cost management perspective. Do you think that that's going to bump out, bump to the side, you know, projects that are more innovation driven because of this? Or do you think, you know, leading companies are still going to find that perfect balance between, you know, cost, you know, finding cost management, sustainable cost management projects, but also continue to drive, you know, innovation? And if so, what areas do you see companies investing in innovation?
Yeah, I would love to lie and say that companies are still committed to innovation as they should be, but the natural reaction when the market is softer is they probably lean more towards that cost management. That being said, leading companies are finding a way to balance cost management and innovation. And it may not be 50-50, but you can't forget about the innovation portion of it. The balance is really the key. And, you know, clients are looking at ways to innovate new products and what can they do to drive sales within their end clients. And when dollars are limited, they need partners, suppliers, as we talked about earlier, to step up and play a bigger role and maybe not at bigger dollars. So what additional things can you do for those clients to allow them to focus on their core business? That's really, really key. You know, some of the areas where you think about people consistently innovating is really in investing is in that technology space. It seems like there's new tablets and phones and, you know, there's talk about Uberization of trucking. There's a lot of innovation that goes into that technology space. And a lot of it has made and helped advance our industries. And I think that will continue to be done. It's, again, it really gets down to how do you add value back? How do you improve your process? How do you do more with less? So yeah, when you think about it, people are definitely putting more emphasis on cost management than they probably are innovation. That being said, leading companies are finding a way to do balance, are having balance. They're looking at simplifying the number of suppliers, asking for more value from those suppliers. And then they're also using technology to drive at data. Big data was a topic for a while, but data is even more critical in business today. And it's not just about what are my rates, but it's predictive analytics about what my clients might look for or might be asking for, which change and shape supply chains. So So companies that can help other clients emphasize or leverage that big data, bringing additional data to the table, is ultimately important. So really, when I think about advice for people listening in terms of cost management versus innovation, challenge your teams and yourself to find ways to put emphasis, resource, dollars towards innovation, and making sure that you're challenging your partners to help you with those cost management, sustained savings opportunities.
No, great point. I think, you know, regarding innovation, I think what I see some companies make the mistake of is, you know, they kind of define innovation projects that are, you know, going to be multiple years, you know, multi-year effort. You know, it's going to require a lot of investment in terms of money and people. There's a lot of risk associated with it. And they tend to kind of then obviously, you know, shy away from those types of things when the environment, the economic environment is a little bit soft or you know, uncertain. But the reality is that there's a lot of ways that you can define innovation projects and that you can get what a lot of folks call, you know, quick wins, if you will, and take a more stepwise approach to leading innovation. I think companies that I see that are leading the way are the ones that, particularly in this environment, are being smart about how they scope out their innovation projects to try to get those key wins that then help fund, you know, the next steps of the project. Do you see the same?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, one, if you don't have a plan, those are the first dollars that tend to go away. But if they do have a plan, then typically they can invest. And even if it's short term or over a longer period of time, you have to have a clear plan for that investment strategy.
So let's bring it down a level now and talk about transportation, you know, and the transportation market. I mean, how would you characterize, you know, the market today, you know, in terms of, you know, rates, capacity, you know, regulations, and how do you see, you know, the market next year, or at least for the next, you know, quarter or two?
Again, I don't have a crystal ball, although I would love one. But, you know, if you're taking a look at what you feel and see in the market today, there's no doubt about the fact that from a rate standpoint, the rates are there's pressure on rates. A lot of procurement professionals are putting pressure to ask providers to take reductions, which may be justified in some cases. We hear every once in a while people asking for slashes of 20 and 30% across the board, which is just unrealistic, not sustainable, and not healthy for either company, quite honestly. And so there is a balance there, but certainly rates are coming under pressure right now, and that's in due to the marketplace growing at a slower percent. When you think about capacity, obviously there is some available capacity. That's why rates will go down. Some of that is just because people are more efficient. But drivers are still in high demand. I talked with a number of carrier partners of ours, and it has not stopped where drivers are continuing to get signing bonuses, while they're taking long-haul drivers and turning them into fleet drivers, and the dollars that are exchanging hands. We've had a lot of customers asking for information relative to fleets, like how can I understand whether I'm paying my fleet the right dollar amount. So there's a pressure there relative to capacity and drivers. I don't want that to seem like the sky is falling, but it's still there and it has not been addressed. You know, I just think about some of the other things that make it tough to predict in terms of what's going to happen in terms of rates and capacity into 2016. Clearly, any of the regulations relative to hours of service restart, ELDs, and the potential information, but the cost impact to do that is very high. And clearly, with new emissions potentially being talked about in 2017, those are other areas where they could put pressure on the market. So we're at a delicate spot. I think there are opportunities there in the marketplace, and I think people just have to be smart about how they go carve out those opportunities, again, thinking long term.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I can't believe that we're still talking about hours of service. You know, you would have thought that, you know, that would have been settled you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, and it seems to be an ongoing, you know, topic and cloud, if you will, over the transportation market. You know, kind of tying it back to the conversation we just had about cost. I mean, does this mean that companies need to look for, from a transportation standpoint, look for more creative ways to manage, you know, transportation costs and capacity in 2016? And, you know, and so what ways can they do that?
there's no doubt people need to be creative about how they look for cost management opportunities within transportation. A lot of what we're seeing from people is, again, the collaboration that we've talked about. Outsourcing 10, 15 years ago was kind of this negative thing of, I don't want to displace employees and so on and so forth, but it's really turned into more of a collaborative outsource discussion where you're actually leveraging the resources and the investments companies are making. So if people are investing in ERP systems or things of that nature, this is a way to actually get more out of those investments. So it's more of that collaborative outsource that people are discussing. Some of the other more recent creative options that people are looking at is really having a portfolio strategy towards your capacity. You might say, well, what does that mean? That really means that not everything should be in a dedicated fleet. Not everything should be on assets. Not everything should be in a brokerage strategy. How do you take a look at your supply chain and truly put the right segments of your business aligned with the types of capacity that exist in the marketplace? Those that have the internal resources to do it, they're looking at trying to sharpen that and hone that each and every day. But really having a portfolio strategy for capacity is really, really important. And, you know, at the end of the day, you need good data to be able to pull these things together. Without that data, it's difficult. The other thing I consistently hear from people is that they just simply don't have the resources. And if you don't have the resources, if you're one of the organizations that find yourself resource constrained, reach out to professionals. There's a lot of organizations, our organization and others, that can help you with this. You still can find ways to be creative in finding opportunities that aren't just short-term opportunistic type savings.
Yeah, no, it goes back to what I said earlier. I think it applies in transportation as well. You know, I talked about, you know, the importance of walking the talk on breaking down functional silos. And I think the reality is when you look at just that transportation, there are silos within transportation, a lot of companies, right? They look at inbound separately than outbound. They look at private fleet separately than common carrier. They look at international separate than, you know, domestic. And I think it begins really in terms of that sparking that creativity and looking for new opportunities really starts with organizationally, you know, taking a more holistic and integrated view of the transportation opportunities. And then from there, you know, gathering that data, working with partners, as you mentioned, to really, you know, take that more network-wide approach to finding how to best align, you know, their network with the capacity available out there across, you know, the different modes that are available to them. So I think that's something that I expect to see leading companies do more and more of in the coming year. I just remind those of you that are joining us live today, you know, we're coming up short on time here. I've got a few more questions for Jason, but if you've got a question for him, you can do so, you know, by submitting it via the submit a question button or via the chat feature. And just a reminder, if you are joining us as a visitor, you do have to sign in first in order to be able to ask a question. So Jason, let's, you know, kind of building off that, what we just talked about, let's talk about transportation procurement now. And certainly it's not a new topic, but it's certainly something that's always top of mind, you know, for executives year in and year out. I mean, you mentioned, you know, some folks with unrealistic expectations of, you know, trying to get 20% cost reductions or, you know, and we all know that the market is cyclical and so on and so forth. But I mean, what are some important factors that companies, that, you know, shippers should consider, you know, as they're thinking about a procurement engagement? And, you know, what are some good lessons learned there?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely seeing kind of a record high number of people that are looking at RFP, RFQ types of engagements. And I think it's important to understand that because we're not the only organization that receives these. And so there's a tremendous number that are out there, and how companies portray themselves and position themselves is important to that carrier community. I think the first part of it starts with good, clean data. Those that do it really well have good, clean data. They understand their data, and they know that how it aligns to their company strategy. Those that rush it with bad data or try to just piecemeal it together often end up with bad results. So clean data is a really important piece of that. The other piece is really talking about and communicating things like lead times and dwell time expectations on the front side. There's nothing worse than bidding on something, getting it, and then finding out my expectations were wrong, and now I can't provide the capacity that they need, or I can't provide it at the rates that the client wants. And so communicating that up front, there's a lot of white papers to talk about how you can improve those areas. And I'm happy to help people find those if they need those. Again, when you're thinking about constraint-based bids, some people just put a bid out there and they look for the lowest cost rates, and that just simply isn't a safe or good strategy. So constraint-based bids are definitely a better way to go. Having a routine around those bid cycles, typically we suggest every year you should at least evaluate it and look at it. But the fact of the matter is, if you don't have the resources to do it, maybe you would look at it every couple of years, depending on what your resource look like internally. A couple of the just low-hanging fruit things are around aggregating low-volume lanes, not leaving stragglers out there. And really, the part that I think most companies miss, but the leading companies get right, is having a plan for executing the procurement event. So once you have the procurement event and you get great rates and great capacity, how you put that into motion and action is really important, because that helps build your trust with your partners. And you have to measure things at the end of the day to hold yourself and your carrier community accountable. Leading companies are doing that, and they're having the most success driving sustainable cost savings.
That's a great point that you just made. I mean, the reality is that, you know, what comes out of a procurement engagement is really a plan, right? And those are all, you know, planned savings. At the end of the day, you have to execute against that plan. And you know, in a lot of cases, in some cases, you know, companies don't even have a transportation management system to actually then, you know, execute on that. So a lot of times, you know, they may have on paper after the procurement engagement, they say, oh, look, we're going to save 5-8% on freight this year. And then when they look at the end of the year, what happened, you know, they actually saved 1%, or they were actually negative. And mainly because, you know, they didn't execute effectively, and they weren't measuring it on an ongoing basis, because we all know things happen, right? You know, you open up new ship from locations, you know, carriers' networks change, so maybe their acceptance rate starts to go down, so on and so forth. There's a lot of different things that can happen. So, you know, I think your last point there in terms of really having the systems and the processes in place to, you know, manage that from an execution standpoint and from a business intelligence standpoint, I think is key. You know, another important trend that I see out there, and certainly something that we've talked about a lot over the past couple of years, is around risk management. And you can look at it, you know, very broadly from a supply chain perspective, and it certainly applies from a transportation perspective as well. I mean, do you agree that risk management is kind of something that's on the front burner for a lot of companies? And, you know, what best practices or leading practices are you seeing companies implement in this area?
There's no doubt that risk management is definitely becoming more and more a priority. And part of that's just the complexity of supply chains and people's businesses. To be successful, you can't have a simple supply chain. You have to have a supply chain that has some complexity to it. But what that often means is that you have more risks. And specifically as you're outsourcing or, I guess, finding suppliers, partners overseas, it's becoming even more important to understand what those businesses are, what their processes are. You know, best companies or leading companies are actually taking the time to go out and visit those locations and do audits of their practices so that they don't subject themselves to unnecessary risks. There was a great example out there recently of a company that's a really substantial company, Lumber Liquidators, that ended up having some product from a supplier overseas that put formaldehyde at 20 times the safety levels allowed in the U.S. Their stock went from $54 to $16. Now, that may not 100% have been aligned to that, but it's definitely impacted it, and it's a shame that had to happen. So there's definitely more of a focus out there. You can't ignore it. There's an interesting quote from an MIT paper that 16% of small to mid-sized companies actually have a person dedicated within their company towards risk, and there's 47% of large companies have a dedicated person. So I would just say for those that don't have that resource, find auditors, compliance people that can help you assess what your risk. If not, think about your plan about how you are going to identify what those risks are. There's always a balance. You can't measure all risk, because at some point the benefit outweighs the risk, or the cost outweighs the risk, but you can't ignore it. And most leading companies are doing a really nice job understanding what their risks are, and they're doing what they can to improve on those or close those gaps.
No, good point there. Yeah, there's been so much data and research in this whole area over the past few years, and you know, I think one of the things that's come out of a lot of the research is, you know, the recognition by a lot of companies, by most companies, that you know, risk management is you know, a critical area that they need to be focusing on more. And I think the research also shows that a lot of CEOs, in particular CFOs, you know, recognize that they're probably not doing enough in this area to to really be best in class, if you will. And one of the other interesting things that I found in the research is that a lot of companies view having strong partnerships with their external partners, be it 3PLs or suppliers or customers, as an effective strategy to mitigate the risks of supply chain disruptions. Or as a way to minimize the impact and duration of a disruption occurring. So really having those, you know, good flow of communication and information between the parties so that again, if something does occur, they can recover, you know, quickly and with a minimal amount of impact as possible. You know, Jason, we're kind of short on time here, so I'm just going to go to my last question. You know, as a way to wrap up, I mean, if you had to kind of boil down everything we just talked about into, you know, a couple of recommendations for shippers heading into the new year, you know, what would those recommendations be?
Yeah, thanks, Adrian. And it's been fun talking with you. And I wish we had more time, but I understand time is important for everyone. Just a couple recommendations I would have is, you know, supply chains are becoming more and more important and complex. And when you think about staying engaged, things like this and staying engaged to the marketplace is super important, even more so maybe than it was 10, 15 years ago. Using data and having the right suppliers to help assist your strategy is really important. And so, routinely meeting with those providers, making them part of your strategy discussions, not just keeping them at arm's length, is probably one of the recommendations I would make. We talked a lot about collaborative and what does that mean. And people throw partner around quite a bit, but routinely meet with the key partners, suppliers you have, challenge each other to do business in a more efficient way, and good results will come from that, whether growth or expense reduction, cost reduction. The only other thing I would suggest is have a clear strategy. I think sometimes people think that, oh, we're just going into the year and we'll see what happens. I think that's a dangerous way to run a business and a supply chain. Have contingencies in place. If interest rates rise, if there was a war, what impact would that create on your supply chain? And make sure that you've got the data to support it. A lot of times I hear companies and people, you know, pulling out their hair, supply chain professionals that want to make change, but they don't have the data to build the business case internally. And if you don't have that, engage people that can help you with TMS, manage TMS, or that can help do some sort of quantitative, qualitative assessment to arm you with the ammunition to make the types of changes you need to be successful.
Yeah, great food for thought and recommendations there, Jason. You know, like I said at the beginning, you know, it's impossible to talk through all the different, you know, logistics trends and things out there that can impact, you know, supply chain logistics professionals in the coming year. But I think we did a nice job at least getting the conversation started on a few. So I want to, you know, thank you for making the time, you know, taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And if there's anything I can do to help you or others, please reach out. I'd love to have a conversation, see what we can do to help.
Great. And I want to thank all of you that joined us live today. We didn't get any questions live, but if you are watching this episode on demand and you've got a question for Jason, you can post a question there. On talkinglogistics.com is where you can find the episode. And if you post a question there, I'm sure Jason would be more than happy to respond via that medium. So with that, again, thank you all for joining us today and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.